Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Robert Lang. He is a director with Brookings Mountain West and the Lindsay Institute. For the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers tapings in Las Vegas are brought to you by the Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're delighted to welcome back to the program Robert Lang. He is director of the Lindsay Institute and director of Brookings Mountain West. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
Thanks for having me.
I have to throw this comment out because you can respond to it. I was talking to somebody about the fact that you were going to be on the program, and they asked about Brookings Mountain West, and I said it's a liberal think tank, and they went, really? I didn't know they had liberal ones.
Well, Brookings wouldn't say it was a liberal think tank. They would say it's nonpartisan as opposed to the Bipartisan Policy Institute, and the sort of reputation of the think tank, partly due to Nixon wanted to firebomb it during Watergate, because it held in its diplomatic safe the Pentagon Papers and things of that nature. So, I'd say on domestic policy, it tilts slightly to the left. On foreign affairs, I think it's right down the middle.
And I wouldn't disagree with you, but it was just a funny comment, and I wanted to get your response.
Well, no, there are liberal and conservative think tanks, and then there are things like when Sam Nunn and Bob Dole started the Bipartisan Policy Center with the idea of not having it partisan. And then Brookings is sort of post-partisan. The most important thing to Brookings is just the sort of credibility policy analysis. It does these tomes on foreign affairs, So they would be hurt to hear that somebody placed them in the political spectrum.
And I would point out that it is a very respected institute. I wanted to talk to you about the next 30 years. Dina Titus, decades ago, wanted to build a ring around the valley to stop the rampant growth that we saw and to build vertically instead of horizontally in the Las Vegas Valley. Now we're hearing discussions about Ivanpah as the new airport. This was something that was being discussed seriously before the recession. Terminal 3 was supposed to alleviate the need for that, certainly in the short term. But in the long term, as we continue to see the growth of tourism and commercial enterprises in the Las Vegas Valley, we're going to need a second airport here, and Ivanpah obviously is the logical choice. We have thousands of acres out there. It'll be industrial commercial development out there, potentially light rail coming into the valley. But the big question is, now we're heading towards a million people in the Las Vegas Valley. Is that sustainable in your opinion?
Yeah, it depends on how we manage the valley. So yes or no, some things are likely to change, technology is likely to improve. The other thing is, we don't sprawl the most. We're not Atlanta, we're not Charlotte, we're not Nashville. Those southeastern metropolitan areas are a third of our density because we are hemmed in by mountains, federal land holdings, and our aridity prohibits us from doing septic or drawing well water out of the ground. So everybody's on city plumbing, and it's expensive to run that for miles and miles and miles out to low density subdivisions. So despite the fact that we fill the valley, the last house in the last subdivision might be on an eighth of an acre. So we don't have the, it's not that we wouldn't like to sprawl. We'd sprawl as much of Atlanta if you gave us a chance. But the physical circumstances and then the federal response to those circumstances of retaining so much land in the federal land holding reserve, BLM, for example, there's a process of us buying some of it. They've set a disposal area up. But every time you do this, if you want to add to it, you have to go back to the federal government for that. So it's a restraint on growth. And it's likely that we'll grow denser because we'll put public transit in, especially light rail, that will, along its path, create a dense corridor up Maryland Parkway, for example.
And that obviously is coming in the not too distant future. As far as sustainability in terms of water, the Southern Nevada Water Authority says, no problem, we can go towards the south. We have the ability. But how long before we need to seriously plan for additional water, and one presumes from Northeast Nevada?
Well, we use less water today at 2.25 million than 1.5 million. So it's not just people. It's the manner in which you use water, and a large share of that water went to yards, you know, went to you know, people's plants around their house, not to their drinking water, not to industry, not to the Strip, which is the most efficient user of water and gets the highest yield because it generates most of our economy out of what little water it uses. So, you know, their optimism is based on a policy response from, you know, two decades back that has been largely successful at reducing our demand for water. And remember, we have the least water out of Colorado. It's another case of, are we, you know, sort of responsible people? We are responsible towards sustaining the growth that we can have based on our resources. But our preference certainly would have been probably to have a greater share of the Colorado supply, 300,000 acre feet, and then the recycled share. It's less than half of what Albuquerque gets, and they're not even in the watershed. You have to pump it over the Continental Divide to get it to Albuquerque.
But the thing that's interesting about the Colorado River is that, you know, despite the, you know, the oversight of the federal government, that the communities along the Colorado River work with each other for the most part. There's one district in Arizona that likes to stir things up. But for the most part, it doesn't matter what the federal law says at this point. The states are taking care of it, which
Agreed.
Is remarkable.
And it's part of the sober reality of the West with a very limited resource. Compare that to the East, where water is abundant. Tennessee and Georgia are at each other's throats. You know, there's a claim that there was a misalignment of the border measurement between Tennessee and Georgia, and that a little piece of the Tennessee River loops into Georgia, and Atlanta should have claim on that water. And they're in very destructive exchanges with one another in those states. Because there was so little out here by way of water, agreements that go back over 100 years now have brokered it, and nobody wants the federal government to be involved because they'll just screw it up.
When you look at Southern California and the wastefulness of the water use there, and like you say, our limited supply from the Colorado River, doesn't it kind of drive you crazy?
Well, you know, they were the major claim holder at the beginning of the process because, you know, California received the, outside of the Northeast and Midwest, California was the most substantially urban and largest scaled population centers in the U.S., like L.A. and San Francisco. So when this was getting developed in the early 20th century, they had the kind of size that required the largest form of intervention. You know, have they been totally responsible with it? You know, that's debatable. It doesn't drive me crazy. It's just part of the reality of what we face. Apparently, even with what limited we had, the supply we had. And remember, when Elvis was dancing with Ann Margaret in Viva Las Vegas, this hadn't even been tapped yet. You know, you were talking about a city of several hundred thousand people off groundwater because we're the meadows. We're naturally a wet valley because we have these enormous mountains to our west that catch snow and then have a little mini Colorado effect down to us.
But the fact that, you know, there's no limit on lawn watering, there's no attempt to capture the water that floods out during flash flooding, billions of gallons of water and no retention basins. I mean, and even though it would take decades to be able to accommodate something like that, but we're going to be here hopefully for decades.
Well, you know, the San Diego Water District relined some of the canals so that they stopped leaking and then captured the additional share of water. So there's been some adaption in California. And during the last drought, of course, we had such a large share of our water in reserve, we were able to sell them billions of gallons of water. That's what was so interesting. There's always the assumption that that lake is ours alone, even though we use one little cove out of it. We use about 3% of it. And that we're in peril, you know, but I've had people from California tell me that, and I had to look them in the eye and say, where do you think your water's coming from? You know, other than the stuff coming out of the north, coming from Owens Valley, that's your water supply as well. So we're all in this together. But there's the Californians don't have a palpable sense of how scarce this is, in that they can't even identify the water sources. For example, where every school kid in Southern Nevada knows this. It's Lake Mead, for example. And we're the closest to the lake. None of it evaporates, and it takes the least energy to push it our way. Unlike the, you know, Hoover Dam's, most of its electricity is going into pushing water through canals in California. It's not lighting up the strip.
It's an amazing phenomenon that has been brilliantly managed. Do you think that eventually we are going to see that water coming from the Northeast?
Not anytime soon.
No, but I mean, 30 years. I mean, that's the thing about airports, RTCs, you have to plan 30 years in advance, and in some cases, 50 years in advance. And so this valley will hold 3.2, I believe, million people in 50 years. So you've got to think that far ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, water technology is changing. I mean, the Israelis still do more with less than we do. You know, and the Australians do a lot with very little water. So the technology keeps improving, and that may be easier than going and taking on the political controversy of pumping water out of a remote part of the state.
All right, let's take a break. More with Robert Lang when we come back.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully's Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
Yeah.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines, just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Robert Lang. He is director of the Lindsay Institute. So, in your opinion, has Nevada now gone from a blue state, I mean, from a purple state, rather, to a blue state, or are we still on the cusp?
You know, in politics, you never want to make the call because you could be shown up the next election. But on sort of the electoral college, on the statewide race, so it's different. I mean, a governor could run a campaign instead of what Laxalt ran, like Sandoval, and be a Republican and still win the state easily. It just depends on what campaign you run. But as far as the sort of, you know, where the electoral votes are likely to wind up, and that's what really defines red and blue. It's about how you vote for the president. It's more likely than not that the state is a deeper purple or lightish blue at this point.
And you know, speaking as a broadcaster who makes money every time there's an election, we want to keep it that way. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much of this was the Trump vote in this off-year election that turned out such a phenomenal result in terms of turnout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's always, that's the problem when you make these structural cases and say, now we're blue. You know, look at New England. There's all these Republican governors up in New England because they run as moderates. And you don't know in the next cycle if there's a moderate Republican at the head of the ticket even, whether or not these electoral votes are, you know, capturable. It depends on the national mood, depends on where you are in an economic cycle, quality of candidate, type of campaign they run. But all else being equal, the state, I wouldn't consider it as swingy as it once was. It's lean blue.
It's interesting, too, that people automatically think that if you're coming from California, then you're going to be a liberal voter. And that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
You might come here and say, I want lower taxes and I want less regulation. I want a smaller state government. The one thing I'd say is that the Californians often still have, you know, what would be considered progressive politics, if you want to refer to them that way, on women's issue or minorities or personal freedoms, you know, marijuana use and things of that nature. So I'd say, I don't think you get a typical Californian, it's a self-selected Californian, someone who's probably seeking less taxation, you know, almost certainly lower costs in housing. And so I don't think they want to reproduce California, but you're not gonna, you can't win them over by appealing to a sort of southeastern US, you know, Mississippi, Alabama Republicanism. That's not how it works.
Also, I thought that it was very flawed for the Laxalt campaign to be anti-California.
Please don't do that.
it just seems that way too many of us spend a lot of time having a lot of fun in California, doing business with California, receiving business from California. The war seems to be ill-defined.
I thought it was remarkable. You want to go tell Elon Musk that you don't like Californians? Think about Reno. How successful is Reno right now, and what share of that is due to Californians and California business? Google, Amazon, Apple, Tesla. I mean, why bite the hand that feeds you? The relationship with California should be more like, look, we're not California, we're near California, and we have a business-friendly environment, and we'd like to engage you on those terms without being so destructive as to harangue you for your high taxation. You know, at this point, we're beneficiaries of the amount of, for example, you know, one of the controversies in California is how much they pay retirees in state government through CalPERS. Those people move here and distribute all of that wealth, their house equity and their permanent pay from California for the rest of their lives, into our economy. What's that worth?
And let's face it, does the average person, even a business person, really think that the comments that are made during a political cycle are the thoughts of the populace?
No. My guess is, you know, that stuff is said, it's hyperbole, but it's especially destructive when I just don't want any business in California to say that if we're going to be the villain, that we'd think twice about putting a branch of our business in Nevada, because there's a lot we can offer California. In fact, California is the center of innovation, and we're like Idaho or Utah, we're the workbench. Our role was that this is what we were missing. Why not put it in Reno if you're going up to Boise? Why not put it in Reno if you're going to Ogden, Utah? So what we did is we positioned ourselves as business friendly and more proximate. And so we've been benefiting from the Californians. In fact, the whole Northern strategy has been basically to connect to the Bay Area and to take those relevant industries that seek lower costs, lower land costs, lower taxation, lower reg, and offer them Reno as a place to do business.
I would say to you that for the last 50 years, that has been the plan.
But there's been times where we took only like call centers. We weren't looking for the technology. And there was a point under an earlier regime of economic development when Jerry Brown won re-election in 2010, there was a sign out on the 405 that said, deja vu all over again, nice going, California. Move your business to Nevada. That is not how to attract California business, especially on the west side of Los Angeles, I might add.
Also, ironically, Jerry Brown turned out to be a whole different person the second time around, way more conservative, especially in fiscal matters, than we had seen before.
He's got a surplus. He ran the state well. So not only was it wrong-headed to do, it was inaccurate to say it, because you don't know how he was going to be as governor. It turned out, you know, surprise, surprise, he was a fiscal conservative. But the other thing is, by, you know, hectoring or lecturing or, you know, deriding a neighboring state that's so wealthy, that is so connected to us, I don't think that serves our interests. Our interests are served by not raising those issues, but instead simply offering the cost comparison without putting a value on, oh, and by the way, you've run an awful state in the meantime. It's just, we're in Nevada, we're open for business. These are the things we offer you. This, New Jersey wasn't yelling at New York when it was taking all the businesses out of New York City. It was saying, we're New Jersey, we're a little cheaper, we got lower land costs. You know, come to New Jersey, not, oh my God, New York is an unheavenly place that no one should visit.
I think from any kind of sales perspective, selling what you have that's positive is always better than trying to promote what is negative.
And in politics.
Yes, and let's take a break. We'll be back with Robert Lang after this.
Nevada Newsmakers tapings in Las Vegas are brought to you by the Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. At Design Outdoor, we specialize in all hardscapes, pavers, and walls you'll need for everything, from wonderful small yards to full-blown outdoor living. And we only refer the best contractors to make your vision a reality. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
I'm men's rights attorney Marilyn York, and because I represent men in all family law matters, women often call me gender traitor, woman hater, and even disgusting. So why represent men and target myself with these offensive monikers? It's simple. Children with fathers in their lives are 6 times less likely to drop out of school, 15 times less likely to go to prison, and 5 times less likely to commit suicide. So ladies, you can hate me, but please love your children more than you hate their fathers.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take an Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Robert Lang. He is director of Brookings Mountain West. With this upcoming legislative session, the power truly now has moved to the South. What effect do you think that is going to have on the North, or do you expect that the legislators, including the governor, will be statesmen and will treat Nevada as Nevada?
I think they'll be statesmen and treat Nevada like Nevada, and here's why. The South was never looking to stick it to the North. They just were looking to not get stuck, if you know what I mean. And so, you know, if you're to believe the hype around Bill Raggio, you know, the guy's got a statue at the airport up there, I'm figuring it's correct. He was like the Robert Byrd on the state level, Robert Byrd, famously a senator from West Virginia, who was great at getting resources for the state of West Virginia so that every outhouse has a 4-lane highway going to it. And, you know, to the extent that Raggio's hype was true, it must have meant that some share of additional resource went to the North. I think what's more likely to happen now is that resources will be targeted on pretty equitable grounds, which is to say that the South would more likely receive 70%+ of those resources, giving its tax share and population percentages. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, the South going to go up there and claim, you know, industrial equipment like reparations after World War I, you know. It's more likely that the state will just sort of equalize and you'll see the appropriate amount of investment for each region.
Do you think that is, I hesitate to use the word fair, but I guess it's the only word, when, you know, certain parts of the North are certainly much older, for example, UNR facilities, mm-hmm. et cetera, are much older, need more maintenance than some of the facilities in Southern Nevada. Do you think that that's gonna go by the wayside?
Well, it depends. Also, remember, UNR has much more space per person than UNLV. So it's that they've built a much larger infrastructure than is typical for a school of that type. It's a rather generous building program. Thank you very much, Mr. Raggio. So, you know, the claim that, for example, some of the buildings are older and there's legacy costs and so on, that's partly, you know, reasonable to discuss. There's also a claim on the southern part that we've been underserved relative to the growth. We have an engineering program that includes one of the world's most advanced robotics lab that's literally in a 99-cent store at the corner of Flamingo and Maryland Parkway. It's the back of the 99-cent store. It's the place that invented that arm for the little girl who's right. been throwing at all those pitches in Major League Baseball. I mean, you're on your seventh engineering building at UNR. You got a guy who's in a 99-cent store. Building by building, anytime UNR wants to go through it, I'd be happy to sit down and show you how much greater expenditures have been shown your way, not just on a per student basis, which is substantial, and not for reasons that, you know, F grades or whatever they've been saying in the past, actually state plugged in, juiced in resources, including recruitment. We don't get one dime to recruit Northerners to the South, which they should come to for graduate education. Meanwhile, the North gets $500,000 plus from the state in a dedicated account to recruit in the South. That sort of stuff should end.
You gonna be coming to Carson City during session?
If they let me.
Well, if they do, please come on Nevada Newsmakers. We'll be there. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. You can also download podcasts of the show free of charge or watch us on YouTube. We'll see you on the next broadcast.